Yes, hello. I'm Chris. I'm from Mozilla. My job is HTML5 and making it easy to understand for people. And I'm trying to speak a bit slower than usually because you're getting this translated. So, and I want to thank the translators so much for being there, because without them, I wouldn't understand what's going on. And I hope you will get a lot more information from me with those ladies helping me out here. So thanks very much for that. Today, I'm going to talk about the future of HTML5 and web technologies. And normally, you talk in these kind of fashion, and you show things. In the future, you will be able to do these things. And in the future, you will be wonderful in your HTML, and you can do great things with JavaScript. And look at these demos that only work in the newest browser. And I think that doesn't help much. And seeing that there's walking robots and standing up robots that say hello to you at this conference so far, there's not much I can do about saying, like, this is the future, because you already have it here. So I'm talking about a few technologies that are available right now in the browser, in Firefox, in other browsers, that help you make better websites out there, and that you should all use today to make it better for the people out there using your websites. Because a lot of times we just don't use technologies, which we don't trust them yet. And the trust is something that I want to give you and want to show you just how simple things are these days to make them more beautiful, to make them more interesting. So the web itself is an amazing thing. When I started as a web developer, it was 1996, and I worked as a radio journalist, and I just realized I can talk to people worldwide without picking up the telephone. I don't have to pay extra for it. People in Japan, people in China, people in Turkey, people in Brazil can listen to me, can see my things, can read what I'm writing without having to wait for a book to come in the mail. This is a visualization of where the internet is in the world and where it's really fast and where it's really big. And I wish this all were white. But we're not there quite yet. But with a few technologies I'm going to talk about, we can do this. So, in the past, we've been limited by technology. HTML, the language that build websites with, or to start to mark up what is what in a website, was very limited. It was just there for headlines, paragraphs, links, forms. It was university papers, really boring text stuff. And then we put images in there, and it became a bit more interesting. But nowadays, we want to build applications. We want to build interactive experiences that people touch, that people play with, that people find things out. And HTML was not good enough for that. That's why we needed something new. And the something new was HTML5, which was a reinvention. It was an evolution of what we had before. It took what we already did on the web and made it a new specification. In HTML4, before that, and Tantek is going to talk more about this later on, we just made up things and hoped people used it. HTML5 came up and saw what people are already using and made it better and made it more interesting and made it more specified than before. So what they did, what was really good, was they did not kill the old internet and say HTML4 is dead and like now don't do this anymore. They just built on top of it. HTML5 is taking what we've done before and makes it better. So it's open for all. You don't need any software to actually run HTML. You can use a text editor. You can use a command line to write an HTML file. You double click it, you open it in a browser. That's all you need. It's backwards compatible. So even when you put the new HTML5 things into your websites, older browsers, bad browsers, will still get something. They don't get locked out. It doesn't tell you this is HTML5. You need to buy a new computer or you need to buy a new browser. That is not happening if you do it right, and it's not by definition. And it works well with other standards. It's not a thing that only works in itself, like Flash was. You have to do everything in Flash, and if you want to do Flash. And in HTML5, you can actually use CSS to style things. You can use JavaScript to make things interactive. It works well with the other standards out there, with SVG. All the other stuff that we did before works now in HTML5 as well. And it has a sensible core in the middle. That's always when you start with something new, you have to cover the basics. You have to make things available. You have to say, okay, this is what we should be starting from. So the first thing that we have is richer HTML semantics. In the old HTML, We just had divs and spans and tables, and that was about it in terms of like structuring the page. In HTML5, we got sections, we got articles, we got navigation, we've got menus. We've got all the things that actually define an application piece in a document or a really, really complex article rather than just a few headlines and paragraphs. We have new form functionality. So instead of just having input boxes like white things that you type things in, we have now date pickers where you can pick a date and it's going to be in your European date format or Japanese date format or American date format and not in the one that you actually don't understand. We have sliders, like we can slide things on in a form rather than just typing a number in. We've got numbers that actually validate if it really was a number. And we got validation. The biggest problem on the web is that people keep filling forms, sending them off, and they did one thing wrong. So with validation in the browser itself, in HTML5, you never send off wrong data because the browser doesn't allow you to. And that makes a lot of sense. We've got canvas for painting and animating. So for games in the browser, we have now a canvas tag. Canvas means I have a part of the screen where I can paint and I can erase and I can rotate and I can scale. So I can make real paintings in the browser without having to resort to a server or to Flash or to Shockwave or whatever. We have, we've got browser history access, which means if you do something in the page and you don't change the URL, you still can go back one step with the back button, or you can bookmark things. You can send a link to your friends that actually will get your friend at the same stage of the application that you were in and not at the beginning again. Because a lot of people build great things that are dynamic on the web and forget that people want to send links around. So with history access, we still have that. We've got video and audio. Video and audio, it's in the page in HTML5. It's the same as a paragraph, as a heading, as an image. You can actually use CSS to style them. You can rotate them. You can make it half transparent. You can do whatever you want with it. It's just another HTML element with a rich API to actually interact with it. And that's wonderful because I can do so many things in video and audio nowadays that I couldn't do in the past. Got drag and drop. You can drag things into the browser and do things with them. You can drag things around and filter them and like everything you can do in a normal application you can do on the web now. And you got browser menus, and I'm going to come back to that later. That means that you can extend the browser itself to actually do something different in its core without having to write anything for the browser itself. So CSS is another technology that we use for styling things, for making things pretty, for making things intuitive. And in the past, we had colors, fonts, sizes, and that was more or less it. And nowadays, we can do rounded corners. We can do drop shadows. We can do gradients. We can do transformations. We can do animation. We can do transitions, so fading from one into another. So these slides here, for example, are HTML. They're not PowerPoint. They're not Keynote. These are all HTML, and all these transitions that we have are done in CSS. And you got 3D in CSS now as well, so you can actually put depth into your page. I mean, as a small demo, and now the translators will probably hate me for doing that. Let me quickly show you something. This, for example, has no image whatsoever in it. This is just CSS. So when you look at the source code of this, you will see that this is all I had to write, and I had a few links in there explaining what Domo is to Americans, and the rest is done in CSS itself. And this is how far CSS gets us these days. You don't have to do any images in the browser anymore. Okay, let's go back to where we were. So the great thing about CSS is that it's not anymore just styling things. It's animating and it's changing things. This example here is, for example, not 3D WebGL or Flash or anything. This is simple CSS. It's a few div elements in the page, half transparent, and when I mouse over it, I do a transition on changing them where they are supposed to go. The animation of rotation of the cube is just a CSS animation. So all of this you can do without having to learn anything different than what you had before. Same with this HTML rotating logo here. This is rotating in 3D space, but this is a simple image. You didn't have to do a video. You didn't have to change it. This is just the image itself gets pulled into the 3D space and changed accordingly. And you can see these sliders here. This is the HTML sliders that I talked about. This is a form element. I didn't have to write that in JavaScript. I didn't have to do anything with it. So you can turn your things into 3D by simply having a little CSS thing in there. And you can use that, for example, for rollovers. This is the old rollover that we had. You put your mouse over something and it changed. You can then fade it to make it a bit more beautiful. This is a transition. You can then flip it around in 3D to make it look real like a 3D interface. You can flip it upwards. So this is one CSS file that you can just put in, and you put these classes on there to get all these different effects out there. So you can flip the box out, you can fade it, you can flip it upward and fade it out while you do it. You can hide the background so you only can show one image at a time. So when the image is away from you, it wouldn't be possible to see. You can do the whole thing upwards as well, and you can even make a Batman-style animation in CSS nowadays with a few lines of CSS without having to resort to any animation or Flash or whatever. So if you want to start understanding what 3D is about, I wrote this 3D tester, and these slides are available later on online. These are all links that you can click. So this one shows you all the things that 3D CSS has possibilities for you. You can change the perspective. You can see if the 3D gets preserved or not, so if these are in boxes or not. You can rotate them around the different axes and see what that looks like, because most of the time you think Z is the one that goes like this, but actually it's the one that goes like that. You can change around different axes and the animation. So whenever I do a 3D thing now, I start with this tool, because I can start understanding more. Okay, I rotate it 40 degrees like this. I rotate it 40 degrees like that. Now it looks like this. I go back that and change all kind of settings that I did not know in my head what they meant. I needed to understand them, so I wrote this little editor for myself. You can shift them around in the coordinate system to see where you want to have this information out there. You can rotate them around the different axes as well to see what kind of styling you can do with that. So the back logo, I'm shifting that around here. And then I start rotating the things around to make a certain 3D effect that I wanted to have. And I could have read the specification and tried to understand it, but it makes much more sense to have a little editor. And once you're happy with what you've done, like I was here, you can click the Create Full Page button, and it creates an HTML document. Then you can just copy and paste and save on your server, and you have that effect without having to learn everything yourself. The editor itself, that whole tester, it's written in HTML5 as well. It's on GitHub. It's available for you. So this is the cool thing, that we can rebuild these applications rather quickly nowadays. So in the past, HTML and JavaScript were always a bit of a, I don't want to rely on JavaScript. JavaScript makes things harder to understand. HTML should be enough. With HTML5, we don't have that anymore. HTML5 is a friend of JavaScript, as I called it. It basically means a lot of the stuff only makes sense when JavaScript is available. But that's good, because we specified the APIs of JavaScript in the HTML5 specification as well. So let's look at a few examples. Drag and drop image editing is a really cool thing to have in a content management system, for example. So you don't want to upload one image after another. So with a few lines of JavaScript nowadays, you can do this. This is a blue beanie maker, so you can take an image from your hard drive, you can drag it into the browser, and then you got the image in there. And then you can give this dog a hat. You click on it, and you have the hat there. You realize it's far too big, let's make it smaller. Okay, it's smaller now. Remove it again. It should be a bit turned, so let's give it an angle and put it on the dog. Still not the same spot, so let's move it further down there and create it. So by dragging an image into my browser and manipulating it in the browser, I don't need Photoshop. I don't need an extra program. I could actually, and this is a silly example, but if your company, for example, wants to have their logo on every image that you have in a content management system, you could drag that in, put the logo in, save it in the browser. So I could right-click this and save it in the browser without ever having to use another application than the browser itself. And the code is ridiculously simple for somebody who knows JavaScript. There's an event listener called drop on the canvas itself, that is the rectangle in the page. And you have an event data transfer files of that event here. And in this, you can read out what the files are, that there are files, that there is a first file, and that the files are actually, it was actually an image. And then do something with it. What I do with it is call a new file reader. File reader takes the file that has been dragged into the browser and gives it to me as a data file. So in this case, I get the target result, which is the file that was dragged in. And then I say read as data URL, which means I get the image as a string and I can put it in the page. So this is all I needed to do to get an image from my hard drive into the browser and to do things with it. In the past, you had to do that with PHP, with Java, with anything from the back end. And nowadays, you can do it in the browser. Adding your own menus is a really, really sexy thing because, it's an interesting thing. When you write an application, you want to do things like real applications do. When you go to Gmail, for example, you want to right-click on an email and you want to see the options that you have for the email, not save image as and see page source. So if you go anywhere on an HTML page, you get normally just this view source and view the HTML and so on and so forth. So in this case, let me see if that can be done. Yeah. So you get copy, select all, you get the down them all, which is an extension that I have to Firefox, but normally you don't have. You can search Google, you can view a selection source and all these things. Now, with HTML5 and the menu element in Firefox, in other browsers not supported yet, sadly enough, you can do your own menu items. So you see rotate, resize, and share on Twitter and Facebook. So this is the browser. This is not my page. This is in the browser, and it's as accessible as the other ones are. So I can now click rotate, and it rotates this logo here in the browser. I can click resize, and it resizes the logo. So this is browser functionality that seems to be in the browser, but was actually done by me in HTML. Because all I had to do is put this in the page. I have a section element, which is that main box here, and I have a context menu called image menu. The context menu that I have here is a menu type context, and the ID is image menu, so this one connects the two. So if I right click on the main section, show this menu, and the menu has an item with rotate, with an icon, and an item with resize, and an icon. And it calls JavaScript functions that are called rotate or resize. These are very simple as well. The rotate function and the resize function just adds and removes a class from the menu item itself, which is in this case the image. And on the image, I do a transition in CSS, and I do a transform in CSS to rotate or scale, which rotates or resizes. So this is all I had to do to put this functionality in there, to extend the browser, so to say, to give the end user an opportunity to get different functionality. Just put a few lines of JavaScript in there and a few lines of HTML, and you're done. And this, taken to another level, which is also supported, it would allow us contextual browsing, which means, in this case up here, I'm having Google Maps. And instead of having the normal toolbar that I have up here in the browser with all these things that I don't need, I have the navigation for the Google map itself. So get direction, current location, my maps, and so on and so forth. Bottom, I have the menu for a Google Doc. So I can that way, I can show people these are real applications running in the browser and not just a website that is an application, has an extra menu toolbar. So with Canvas, I can actually edit things as well. So this one is in Chrome. I can double-click any image and actually crop it. Get rid of all the stuff that I don't want and save it to my hard drive. In Firefox, I can do the same thing with a right-click menu and getting a crop option here. And I can crop the image again and double-click it, and I can then save the image, only the one that I want to have. This is now a script that I have on GitHub, but it's actually a bookmarklet as well. So you go to any website out there, and you can press that crop button in your browser and start cropping that image in there. So you can go to any news website. You only want a part of an image. Why should you have to start Photoshop or an image editor when the browser can do that? And we can do that in JavaScript now. The code is available. And as I said, every time you see something in the slides here, you can actually click it in the browser and you will see that demo running here directly now as well. So I can do the crop and I can crop it here, and I only have that image that way. So, did I close my browser? Yes, I did. Good job, Chris. This is live coding and live demos. This is how it happens. So, cropping, wonderful. Now, you can go further and build full games in HTML. So this is a simple game of catching things on a screen. So I can use my keyboard to move that HTML5 shield around and catch things. Whenever I catch things that are part of HTML5, like semantics or canvas, then I get extra points. If I catch the wrong ones, I get points deducted from me. So Flash and CSS, for example, is not part of HTML. It's just a friend of HTML. And I can move my mouse around to move that shield around, or the keyboard. And as there are lots of good event handlers in HTML5, I can actually do the same thing on a mobile phone. So this is now running on my Android phone. That's the same HTML page that you just saw in the browser. And on the phone, I can actually use the accelerometer to move that shield left and right. This is not possible in Android browser itself. This is only Firefox and Android at the moment, which is a bit annoying, but I'm quite sure that they're working on that. The cool thing about that game, the interesting thing that I wanted to do with that game, I mean, it's not magic. It's like everybody wrote games like that in the past, is that the whole game is controlled by HTML. So I did want allow people to write a little game like that without having to know Canvas or JavaScript or anything. So if you look at the source code of the game itself, you see that all these image elements have a class of sprite on them, which means they will be one of these things that fall down that you have to catch. And they have a data collision attribute that has an energy field here. So when you catch the video one, you get 20 points extra. When you catch the flash one, then you get minus 20 points, so you lose energy. So if you wanted to take that game, and it's open source and it's Creative Commons, use it for whatever you want, and you want to change little Godzillas in there or like elephants or whatever, you just change the energy numbers in the HTML and the game is changed to your needs. So we can make web makers of games, as Mark told us about earlier, by simply reading the HTML and generating our game from it. I'd said that we have all these great event handlers nowadays, so key down allows me to get the keyboard, key up as well, touch start, touch end, which is on touch interfaces like tablets and mobile phones, click is the old click handler, mouse move is moving the mouse around, and device orientation is how I tilt my phone in the three different axes. Full screen is something that people want for a long, long time. So the problem is when I write an application and it's in the browser, it still feels wrong, even if the menus are there. It's like it's in the browser, it's not an application. It looks like something weird. So we now have a full screen API and WebKit as well that allows you to take any element in the page and make it full screen. The problem with that, of course, is security, because I could build an element that looks like a browser, and all the browsers are done in HTML, so I can simulate your browser and ask you for your credit card details without you knowing it. So there's a few things that tell us that we're going full screen mode and it's really coming from the page, so there's a few security things that we're working on. But the opportunities are great. Clicking on anything in the page and using the full screen on a mobile phone and on a tablet is much, much better than having a browser with like lots of space in there. The mouse lock API is a big problem for gaming. Like, you see the mouse cursor here moving around. And every time we go to the end of the screen, the right or the left, I get stuck. So I cannot turn around the 360 degrees that I do normally in a game with a game controller or with a Wii. So the mouse lock API, which is turned on right now, you don't have a mouse cursor anymore, but you just move the whole thing around. So you have full 360 views in the browser without being limited by where the mouse is anymore. So this way you can write real games in the browser that look and feel like real games. So in this case, this is a Castle Wolfenstein level, I think, that has been shifted. And this is running in the browser now in 3D space without you having to see the mouse all the time, because that's just unwieldy. Of course, the next logical level of that is to have a gamepad API. So the gamepad API in Firefox Nightly, and also WebKit has something similar, allows you to use a joystick or an Xbox controller in HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So this is a game called Rockets, which was actually done in HTML5 with WebSockets and all kind of goodies that browsers give us. And you can see my colleague Robin Hawks now playing with the controller and controlling the game that way. So as an input device, we now have game controllers in the browser, and that is pretty cool. I originally wanted to come with my joystick and change my slides that way, but I didn't get home before I actually came here to Tokyo. So one thing that we forgot about when we invented all these new cool things is that we should actually develop with the web. The browser itself should be our development environment. And there's a lot of stuff coming right now in Firefox, and it's already there. For example, the Scratchpad. Scratchpad means I can write JavaScript in the browser itself. So I've got this little editor here that allows me to write JavaScript with color coding and everything in there to try them out quickly without having to change a file on my machine, uploading it to my server, seeing how it runs in the real server, getting access, having to be online. I can just write JavaScript in the browser itself and try it out. And that way I can get much, much faster than before, because I just can work in the browser. Okay, that was the mistake, now let's fix it, rather than like finding new things all the time. So in his case here, I wrote the awesome function, and you can highlight it and run it in the browser, and now you got the alert here in the Google result page, really, which doesn't normally allow you to JavaScript anything. Tilt is interesting, because Tilt takes 3D into browser, into page debugging. So this is my blog. This is the source code of my blog. It's not that heavy in JavaScript. When I switch Tilt now, I can see my blog in 3D. So I see how far down the DOM nodes I'm going in my blog. So I can then click all of these little elements and see what they are and start editing the CSS of them as well and start editing the HTML of them and start seeing which handlers are actually applied to it. So that way you can see how far your JavaScript is, how much HTML you've written that is unnecessary, how deep down your web page goes that might be hard to maintain for people. So you can just do the outlines in case your computer is slower, and this was actually done on this MacBook, so it's not that fast anymore compared to new ones. You can see the CSS of every element, you can see the HTML, and you can set options according to what you want to do. Now, my blog was boring, so I thought, let's try on Facebook. And in Facebook, the interface does not look that impressive, and you wonder how much HTML is actually going on there. So you switch to Tilt, and then you actually start visiting Facebook City, because it's much, much deeper than my blog was, and the HTML is much, much more complex. And you can see this little thing here on the right-hand side. I have no idea what that is, but it's these kind of things to find out, what is that? What is it doing? Why is it there? And that's the kind of stuff that is hard to find if you go through the HTML itself, because most of the time the HTML is minified and made hard to read. Now, interesting was also Google, because Google is nothing but a search box. So I thought this would be very, very simple HTML. Not so. This is what Google looks like, and I have no clue what's going on there. It's quite interesting to find these little things. So Tilt is a great little tool, and you can actually, in the browser, you can see it. You can actually shift it with Command-Shift-T, and you can see what the browser does. Now, where we're going with all of this, and Mitchell talked about this earlier, is apps. We want little apps for the web. That was the big success of the iPhone, of the iPad, of Android. Apps do one thing, do it simply, and we want to allow that for the web. So the approach of Firefox, and I'm going to show an older version of that, there's a new version out now as well, is we're using HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript to build apps for the web. And the web is the distribution model. The problem now with apps is I build something for Apple, and then I have to put it into the Apple Store. And I have to wait for them to say yes or no. And I have to have people have to find it in the Apple Store. So, or in the Apple online store, of course, not in the physical store. And with our system, they're already on the web. Your website can become an application just by writing a manifest file that tells you what this application does. And we think about web intents and web activities, which actually tell you what the application should do. So I'm going to go into that a bit later. So this is what it looks like right now. Say you have a browser, and you have you have applications in there. In Firefox, it's an extension at the moment. You can try that out. But in the future, we want to have it in the main browser. You have an apps tab down there that tells you there's a Flickr app and there's a Times app. The New York Times app, I click on it, and it becomes a full screen app with like this little icon there. You see there's no URL bar. We now know we're in app world. We're not in website mode anymore. This is an application. And it has touch interfaces, much like you expect on a tablet. And it looks actually much better, much more readable than a website would, and much more focused on what it's supposed to deliver. Now, if you offer an app, you just do it with a meta tag. And a browser realizes, hey, there's an app available. Do you want to install the Twitter app instead of just seeing the Twitter page? And if you say that, the Twitter app will appear in your browser. So this is how people would install applications. And they would be available not only in the browser, but also in the operating system. So they would be in your applications folder on Mac or in your programs folder on Windows. So when you have an app open and you have an app installed, then any link to New York Times, for example, now would open in New York Times instead of just being another tab open that opens the New York Times website. The browser will realize what is an application and what is just a normal page to open. Web intents are saying, telling the browser that you want something. For example, a photo. This one is a demo where we have a sepia filter to make things look old. And I have a get photo button. And that get photo button just calls a JavaScript called get photo. And the browser, as you can see, every time something is this gray, this dark gray thing here, it's actually from the browser, not from JavaScript, not from my own page. I don't have to style that. This is coming from Firefox. So I asked get photo. And the browser says, hey, your photos are on Flickr. That could be on Facebook. That could be on Google. That could be on everywhere. And as the JavaScript developer, I don't need to know where your photos are. The browser knows. So with a web intent or activity or action, no matter what we will call it, it would actually the browser would know where my photos are, and I can pick one of the photos and give it to you. I can then run the sepia filter, that button here, and now it's this old style photo, on the image. That's again done with Canvas. And then I say, store the photo. Send it back to where it came from. And again, I can say, okay, I store my photos on Flickr, and I now say get a done back in my page, and it stores my photo on Flickr. The benefit of this is that you don't have to tell people where your photos are. It should be your control as the user to store your information wherever you want. If a page tells you you have to sign up for Google to store your photos, that's just not good. So we're taking this further, even this idea with browser ID. Browser ID is a simple way to identify yourself on the web. Who are you on the web? What do you want to log in with? The problem we have is that every website wants you as a username and a password. And you always forget that password when you come back 2 weeks later because you use something very clever. So we thought, what is the situation when you forgot your password? And every website out there says then, hey, we sent you an email to reset your password. So we thought, hang on, email is already an identity. Why would I have to have a username and a password if my email could be a verified identity for myself? So in browser ID, you can store your emails as identities. You can have different emails for different identities if you want to log in something for work, something for your pleasure. And the validation happens in the browser and with a trusted provider or on your own server. So as the browser knows the emails that you've used in the past and you validate it with another server, you don't have to actually maintain a new password and username. It is a protocol, it's not a service, and it's fully decentralized. So Google Mail, Hotmail, and other people can use browser ID if they want to, so you don't have to do the validation yourself anymore. Or you could do it on your own server if you want to. It's driven by Mozilla, but independent of it. So there's other players in there as well, because we thought it should not be only us. So this is what it looks like as a demo, and a demo is available on GitHub. I have a sign-in button with browser ID, I click on it, and then I get a pop-up window, and the pop-up window tells me, okay, Chris, you wanted to have somebody to log in with browser ID. Now, I stored two emails in browser ID, this one, the Chris Heilman one, and the cupid@gmail.com. The pop-up window tells me that the webrocks.com, which is my server, wants me to log in. So you always know what you're logging into. it's not randomly like, oh, I log into, where it's coming from. So I choose one of my identities, and then it validates it, and it finds out, okay, Chris is logged in. Oh, there you go, chrishyman@gmail.com. You are a user right now. And this is all you have to give people. You don't have to give out your photo. You don't have to give out your gender. You don't have to give out your address. All they need to know is who you are. And you can be an email address that has been verified by Browser ID or by Google or by Hotmail. And this is what Browser ID is about. Now, implementing Browser ID as a developer is incredibly easy. This is right now, until it's supported in the browser itself, we have a JavaScript here, the include.js JavaScript at browserid.org that you put in the page. And then you have navigator.id get verified email. And this one gets you an assertion back. And if that assertion has been sent, fair enough, you have to verify it. If not, well, that browser doesn't understand browser ID. So verifying the email as a web service here in PHP could be done in any other service, in any other language out there. So all I have to do is send the assertion and the URL that wants to verify to browserid.org/verify, and the curl thing here just sends that off to that service. So the assertion that came back in the JavaScript comes from that PHP file. In the future, we want to make that easier. If somebody like Gmail or Hotmail says, hey, they are browser ID providers, you don't have to do that at all anymore. Because if the browser is logged into Gmail already, then you can be verified with browser ID through Gmail. So going mobile is the last thing that I want to talk about quickly. I think I'm running out of time anyways. It's a big thing. I mean, mobile is the new thing in the West. I mean, in America, everybody's like, ooh, tablets, mobile phones. It's actually funny coming here, seeing that I was here 3 years ago for the last time, and people sat in the train watching television on their mobile phones. And in America, like, that's the future. And here it's like, yeah, well, I've had this for 5 years. Don't worry about it. So, but it's annoying because there's so many cool things in mobile phones these days. I mean, this one is faster than the first computers that I used to write my websites with. And it has more features. The problem is, as a web developer, I don't get to use these features. I have to be a Java guy. I have to be a Google, an Apple developer to get access. So we got this website called Are We Mobile Yet? It shows you all the hardware that is in a mobile phone these days. All the things that you could play with that you have access to. And all the things that are green are things that we can access in JavaScript. All the things that are red, we cannot do yet. And that's unfair. And that's why Mozilla is one of the companies that says, you know what, we want this, and we're working on it, and we're doing it. And we call it BootuGecko and web APIs. Actually, the BootuGecko session is in the other room, so tough luck. But I'm going to talk about it quickly as well. So the things that we're working on right now, the APIs that you can test now with a mobile Firefox, and there's a URL for that. There's a battery status API. I can find out how much battery is left in your phone with JavaScript. Might be a good idea to test that before you run a conversion or something, or a big WebGL animation. You have a camera access. You can take a picture in JavaScript on a tablet in Firefox and use it in the browser, like with the cropping or the resizing that I showed earlier. All of this can be done in the browser right now. You can build something like Instagram with a nightly of Firefox and these web APIs. IndexedDB allows you to store information in a database in the browser itself without having to have a server for it. So that one gives you real access in a database style to data rather than local storage, which just is a key value base. The Vibrator API allows you to vibrate the phone to actually and maybe good together with the battery API because you might empty it that way. Sending SMS. You can send a text message from JavaScript with these web APIs in Firefox Mobile. And these are only the first things that we started with. And these have been delivered. These ones we need you to test right now. BootuGecko is the whole project that we're working on. And these are just screenshots of things that I've seen live. So this is an interface on the mobile phone that is fully done in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So there's no native code here. This is all
done much like a web page built for the mobile phone itself, for text messaging, for getting your address book. So much like you did with Facebook years ago, that you built Facebook APIs, apps, we can now build apps on the mobile phone in HTML itself, in the language of the web. And why not? Why should I have to learn a new language just to show something on a mobile phone? And that is what ButuGecko is about. We are breaking open the mobile phone for you to access in JavaScript and build things that are amazing and open and inviting on mobile phones themselves. And that is all I had. So I want you to play with that. I want you to go crazy and to basically try these things out. As I said, all of this is available to you. All of these things are open. All of these things need feedback. And you can play with them and do really, really interesting things. So don't be afraid. Don't try things out. They will break. They will go wrong. But there's nothing that that should stop you from making the web of tomorrow better than the web of today. And the more people like us who actually know technology and know how to program, build things to make it easier for other people to use the web, the more people will use the web for really, really good stuff. And the 3D tester that I showed, Popcorn that you saw before, is just the start of that. We want people to use the web and not just sit in front of a television and just hope that they get some information, because the web is better than that. And you all are developers out there, and just play with these things, and it's really not that hard to do. So thank you very much.